So the title of this talk is Surface Soil. Surface Soil. Time's up. Surface Soil Quality Response to Irrigation Method in a Western U.S. SEEP Watershed. And SEEP stands for Conservation Effects Assessment Program. And so what we're going to look at over the next 12, 15 minutes is how soil quality or change in ecosystem service is shown by changing the way we apply water. And I've done this work, and there should actually be four co-authors up here. I missed Diane Stott with NRCS. But Dave was my research leader when I used to work with the ARS, and Doug Carlin, if you know Doug, he works for the ARS back in Iowa. And so we're looking at the change from what typically has occurred in the bottom left to more current in the bottom right. And so this work was done when I used to work up in southern Idaho on about a 220,000-acre watershed within this Upper Snake Rock watershed. And this watershed is bounded on the north by that dark blue line. That's the Snake River. And the irrigation tract began in the early 1900s, and it diverted water from a large reservoir off to the right of this picture into those light blue lines, which are canals. And so the irrigation tract itself is bounded on the south side by this canal called the Highline Canal. And water is diverted via gravity, basically, to 220,000 acres of irrigated cropland. This began in the early 1900s, and if it wasn't for irrigation, there would be no crops that were grown in this valley. And so when they began to irrigate this in the early 1900s, it was magic. And it's actually called the Magic Valley for a reason, because of the crop productivity, which is very great in this area. And so here's the issue. From the early 1900s to roughly today, we see these sorts of landscapes across south central Idaho. And when you see this picture, what's one of the things that immediately jumps out at you? Ooh, salinity. You're close. It's very close, all right? Yeah, so you're talking about color is really what you're targeting, right? So in the foreground, you may think it's a salinity issue, but this is an irrigation issue due to furrow irrigation causing erosion or loss of the A horizon and redeposition at the bottom of the field. So these sites have been historically furrow irrigated since about 1910, 1915, give or take. And in this foreground picture, the irrigation water, it flowed from the right to the left, eroding the topsoil and redepositing it at the bottom of the field. So all these fields in south central Idaho have been graded to allow for furrow irrigation to occur. And so this is the issue. The issue is with degradation of soils or loss of ecosystem services. And so the issue deals, like I said, with furrow irrigation. This is at the headwaters of a ditch, right? We see great, if you've never seen this before, this is what this looks like at the headwater of a ditch. You have great erosional losses, especially at the headwaters, deep cuts within the furrows themselves, and the soil is typically lost from this site. And so there's been some transformation since about the early 1980s to sprinkler irrigation along this irrigation track, and we're about maybe 40-50% sprinkler irrigation now. The transformation was due to the NRCS EQIP program. And so there's been a push to not only conserve water, but to conserve soil, and hopefully improve, among other things, ecosystem services in this irrigation track. And this is what I'm going to talk to you today. So our objective in this study was to identify changes in essentially soil quality. I guess you could call it ecosystem services if you'd like. I think they go hand in hand with this talk. And hopefully identify changes in soil quality that have been in these sites that have been historically furrow irrigated, but we're starting to see this trend or switch to sprinkler irrigation. And does that help solve some of those problems like you saw in the foreground in that last photo? And so what we did was, you know, this is a large irrigation track, but it's really difficult to find four producers or any producers that are kind of doing the same thing, right? And so we were lucky enough to find four producers across this irrigation track that were basically in similar cropping rotations. They were all currently in irrigated barley. Actually, they just had come out of irrigated barley, and what you see where we're soil sampling here a number of years ago was volunteer barley that was coming up after harvest. All these producers had similar site management practices in terms of tillage, et cetera. Climatic conditions are the same across this location. The soil types were similar, if not identical. They're all silt loam soils. And we sampled 0 to 5 and 5 to 15 centimeter depths. And this was sort of a current practice for this type of a program. And just to let you know that this soil sampling scheme had been used in a number of other SEEP watersheds across the U.S. And the only difference between these four producers was that on site, they had a portion of their field that was furrow irrigated or a portion that was sprinkler irrigated. And the switch had from furrow to sprinkler irrigation had taken place within approximately the last 10 years prior to us going on site. And so what did we do? We soil sampled 0 to 5 and 5 to 15 centimeter depths. In the furrow irrigation, we chose 3 points along the top of the field at random, and we chose 3 points along the bottom of the field at random. And around each one of those points, and I failed to put this on the slide, but around each one of those points, we collected 20 soil samples and composited those to comprise one sample. So we did that 3 times across the top of the field, 3 across the bottom. And in furrow irrigation, we actually separated soils into bed, shoulder, or furrow locations to look at changes in soil quality within that practice. Under sprinkler irrigation, we essentially did the same thing, 3 points across the top of the field, 3 points across the bottom. All right, and so we still have that remnant of slope from the previous furrow irrigation, but now it's under sprinkler. And the goal is to I think I already mentioned this, is to identify changes in soil quality because we switched from one to the other. And so what did we do? And one of my colleagues in the back, Ken Barbrick, asked me, well, what did you analyze for? And I didn't want to, like I said, steal my thunder. And this is what we did. And so we analyzed for bulk density, clay percentage, water stable aggregates. We measured pH and electrical conductivity, soil organic carbon, microbial biomass carbon, potentially mineralizable nitrogen, beta-glucosidase activity, and we measured extractable phosphorus and potassium. And you'll see some terminology after all of those analyses. And what we did was we went in with all this data and we entered it into a program called SMAF, or Soil Management Assessment Framework. And see some heads nodding. Doug Carlin's he's a big proponent of SMAF, and so I've been indoctrinated, and so now I'm a big proponent of SMAF as well. So these 11 soil characteristics get dumped into SMAF, and the assessment framework or program provides physical, chemical, biological, and nutrient scores, or unitless scores, based on those factors that you see in the above on the slide. And so now you can see which soil characteristics go into physical, chemical, biological, or nutrient. These get put into this program, and the output is a unitless score for those four soil quality indices, and then the program itself calculates an overall soil quality index. And so this is what this looks like. There's going to be a take-home quiz after the fact. If you've never seen SMAF before, this is an Excel spreadsheet on steroids, that's what I like to call it. It's about 50 times to the right of the screen, and then there's probably 20 tabs at least on the bottom. And so the way this works, there are algorithms that run in the background that take into account the inputs and whether or not the soil is better or worse given a certain soil characteristic. And I can go into more details if you'd like, but I'm not going to do it this morning or this afternoon. And so what you see here is you'll see the soil texture, the soil type. You'll see in this section of the SMAF, this section is all of the data that we collected in the laboratory. So all 11 soil characteristics get put into the SMAF. And then you press go, and you end up with a heck of a lot of data. And what you're looking at here, this is the output. This is the physical, chemical, biological, and nutrient indices. And they're typically scored on a scale from 0 to 1. All right, and so 0 being poor and 1 being the best. And then what these four indices are used for is to create the overall soil quality index. And so we take all of this data and we run statistical analysis on it and look at the differences between these two systems. And so this is what we found. Again, there's going to be a quiz after the seminar is over. All right. This is actually in a paper that is currently under review, or it's in internal review, and I'm not going to go through this data because I started looking at it and I said, well, this is just overwhelming. I think this is ridiculous to talk about this in this session. So I'm going to hit you with the highlights, and this is what we found. Under furrow irrigation, there were subtle differences between bed versus shoulder versus furrow, and in fact, if you looked at the overall soil quality, it followed that trend. The bed typically was greater than the shoulder, which was typically greater than the furrow, and you would think, I mean, logically, that that would occur, and it actually does. But the more logical finding was that the soil chemical, biological, and nutrient indices were always greater in the field bottom than the field top. And if you remember from that one of those first slides, just by observation alone, you would think that. But now we have maybe more hard evidence that it's really occurring. And overall, the soil quality was greater in the field bottom versus field top. And again, that's because of those erosional and depositional transformations that have occurred over 80 years or 100 years. I think one of the really interesting portions of this study was that we feel that soil quality indices can be, and I should have said dot, 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 linked to greater crop yields and depositional gains in field bottoms. And that last portion of that statement was published in 1985 by a scientist from Kimberly ARS location named Carter. And we could start making these connections between soil quality and greater yields in areas within a field. It's really, really fun, or, you know, greater ecosystem services, if you will, because of deposition. If you look at the sprinkler fields just by themselves, we saw hardly any difference between the top and the bottom of the field. And we said, oh, well, that's interesting. So let's take a look at the next piece of the puzzle. And the next piece of the puzzle is looking at the comparison between furrow and sprinkler irrigation. And the field tops under sprinkler irrigation always had greater indices as compared to furrow. In the field bottoms, it was exactly opposite, which was interesting. And I think that's just because we have greater deposition or greater A horizon or greater thickness of A horizon in the field bottoms, still under furrow irrigation versus sprinkler. And we see greater overall indices under furrow. And this is the really interesting thing. If you compare both the systems overall, there's really no difference between both of them. And so what this comes down to is, you know, where you're taking your soil samples and for data interpretation. And so I'll conclude with this. So soil quality assessment, or improvements in ecosystem services due to irrigation practice, needs to consider soil management, the sampling location, obviously, and other concerns like edge of field erosional losses under furrow irrigation, or in this instance, reducing furrow irrigation and reducing infiltration and perhaps water that's being infiltrated and used someplace else. And now with the shift from furrow to sprinkler irrigation, we see less water in our aquifer, if you will, and that affects people downstream, believe it or not. So it's a giant puzzle that we're working on, but overall, I think the switch between furrow and sprinkler irrigation has been positive in terms of improving soil quality and ecosystem services. Thank you.
We do have time for a question or two.
Jim, did you find more soluble flexes, for example, potassium versus phosphorus, where it was really soil particles that carried everything?
Yeah, so the question was, did we find more soluble, say, phosphorus or or potassium, or was it particles within, probably, I'm assuming, the furrow field bottom? And that's a good question. We really didn't look at that, but I can tell you that we know that phosphorus is, at least total phosphorus, typically associated with sediment phase, right? And so that's really what's moving in that system. I don't know if that answers your question. Potassium was pretty much the same from the top to the bottom of the field. There might have been some subtle differences. There actually was greater potassium in the bottom of the field, but if you look at the overall potassium concentrations, if you were to, say, do a fertilizer recommendation, you wouldn't need any potassium in that system.
Yeah. One more quick.
Gary? All right, one more quick.
So your irrigated fields used to be furrow irrigated.
Right.
So